Hello, my magical friends. My name's Ayumi. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And you're listening to Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. Whether it's your first or 159th time listening, we welcome you to our space to celebrate magical girls from every corner of the world. We have a bit of news, and I've watched some stuff, and then we'll get to today's topic. So let's get started. So first in the news is a little bit of an update about Wacha Primaji. So of course this finished up, oh goodness, quite a while back, and we've been waiting very, very impatiently for any news of a season 2. Unfortunately, there isn't any such announcement quite yet, and they've been updating things with the game, the arcade game, you know, every few months, so it is still alive in that sense. But as of last week, they've announced that there's going to be a brand new story told in a live reading in September 15th and 16th. So this is going to be an entirely new story with the voice actors reading live on stage. And tickets have already been made available. So that's pretty cool, pretty exciting. And we'll have to just keep seeing what happens there. By the way, also, for anyone who is a fan of Prepara, the mobile game is finally available to download, or pre-order, I should say. I believe it officially launches in August. I know that's something that a lot of people have been waiting a very long time for. Next, we have a Kickstarter announcement for the indie comic Magical Natalie. There is no news about what this is, just a few different staff announcements. This is going to be part of a general comic Kickstarter that will be launching soon. So a link to that will be in the show notes. You can't pledge quite yet, but you can sign up to get notified when it launches. Next, this is a new Magical Girl series, something that was actually entirely new to me, but Netflix released Super Team 4 on July 20th, and this is actually an African-produced magical, well, it is a superhero series, but there is a magical transformation sequence, so I've decided that it is close enough to count, and it's also very exciting because this is set and created by folks from Zambia. So continuing to get more and more representation through, you know, behind the scenes as well as, you know, in front of the screen, which are both very important factors. So yeah, very, very cool. And then finally, two more things. One is really short, but we've been getting slowly more and more news about Balala Magic Fate Castle 2, the second season of this particular iteration of Balala the Fairies. They have been slowly doling out kind of teasers and little things here and there on Weibo, which is a social media site based in China. And we know now that it's going to be themed around the four seasons, which is pretty cool. But right now there are only three members, which means that there probably will be an additional member joining the team. And as of this week, they've also revealed a silhouette for a new character, and it seems to be perhaps a magical boy. And there's kind of a wintry vibe going around in the aesthetic of the picture around the silhouette. So it's yeah, pretty exciting to see. no news yet about the character otherwise, but that is the fair assumption. So that's pretty cool. And finally, this is actually some pretty big news, but the Disney created Magical Girl series, which has now been officially rebooted. It looks like the graphic novel will be rebooting, and the first edition, the first volume, which is called A New Beginning, right, Un Nuovo Inizio, is coming out on October 4th in Italy. There's already listing on Amazon Italy. I don't know if it's elsewhere yet. You have to check your local places, I guess, but if you search for that Italian title, you might be able to find it elsewhere. So that's pretty exciting. There's just a lot of great stuff going on. It's pretty exciting. But that is all the news. So let's get on to what I've been watching. So I did lie last week and I said I hadn't watched anything, but that's absolutely not true. I did, of course, watch Soaring Sky Prehere, but last week was just a really long episode again. So I kind of wanted to kind of tiptoe past that. It's fine. But yes, just to catch us up, Soaring Sky Prehere, We're now in the second half officially with episode 25 this week, and episode 24 last week was also quite lovely. I'm really, really excited to see how they are just kind of very slowly building up the narrative. It is, you know, unique for the franchise, but I'm really, really having a great time. Also, I wanted to shout out a YouTuber I adore named Dore Imani. So she does a really kind of interesting, unique take. I mean, all her Magical Girl videos are fantastic. If you're a fan of Magical Girls, you should go subscribe to her YouTube channel. But regarding Precure in particular, one thing she's been doing as of last year is at the halfway point of a season of Precure, she makes a video about how she feels about the characters and how things are going and what she thinks there needs to be more of. You know, just her general feelings on the story so far. And yeah, she's really cool. So definitely check her out. As far as anything else I've been watching, I've been, you know, slowly getting into more and more stuff. Mostly just watching stuff for the podcast. So I'm going to just kind of keep things a little quiet. You'll find out soon enough what those topics are. You know, the seasonal things. Right now, there's just Precure. Though, that being said, I'll put a link to this in the show notes. You can watch all of Call Me Witch Lara, which had aired in Korea last season. It's 13 episodes. They are short, I think about 15 minutes long, a little bit less because commercial time, etc. But you can actually watch those all right now on YouTube officially. I tried to check out a little bit. It's going to be a challenge because I don't know Korean, but I think it's going to be fun to kind of just watch anyway. I mean, I watched 20 episodes of Balal the Fairies without any subtitles either, so I'm sure I can figure out something, you know, context clues, etc. But yeah, so that's pretty cool. I think that's everything. Yes, so with that, let's get to today's topic. So I'm very excited for the franchise we're jumping into today, just dipping our toe with our first episode of, to be honest, because we're finally starting to cover the Pretty series. At the beginning of this podcast, I had not watched any of this franchise, and my understanding of it was this was a franchise that some people questioned if it belonged in the franchise, in the genre, and others said it absolutely did not belong in the genre. I understood that the best way to find out for myself is just to watch the show. So I started with the Pretty series last year, and I enjoyed it so far, but it didn't take long for me to decide that I agreed with, you know, the other folks who considered it part of the genre. It's very clear to me that it is. So far, I've only watched the Pretty Rhythm side of things. I have not gotten into Pre-Para or Kirata Pre-John. Oh, and of course, I did watch Wacha Primaji while it was airing. But basically, it's really, really, for me, just a no-brainer to call it a Magical Girl show, and we'll get into it in the main chat. But I do know that some people might strongly disagree, and to that I say, too bad, we're going to be talking about it on this podcast. Yeah, so we're talking about the third season today, which is Pretty Rhythm Rainbow Live. I think for many people, this is a big Grand Slam, like a really, really popular season from my understanding, and it definitely seems to be the case for our guest today, Ars, aka Puritikuma on the socials. Yeah, he's a translator, just like me. Well, I am sometimes. And yeah, just like someone I definitely thought for sure needed to be on the podcast to get some interesting perspectives on Magical Girls. So here we are. Some warnings before we get into the main chat. This series does contain depictions of abuse between friends and within families to dubious resolve. We'll get into details in the main chat, of course, but just to be warned that, you know, if you haven't watched the show before and that's something that is uncomfortable for you, that might be something that you need to keep yourself safe for. We also do talk about ethnic erasure with, in particular, one of the characters. We talk briefly about the sexualization of minors. Oh, and there is mention of self-harm. So again, lots of wild stuff going on in this season. Also, just kind of in general with this franchise, it's a pretty wild one. But yeah, I think that's everything. So with that, Please enjoy this episode with ours about Pretty Rhythm Rainbow Live. So we are here today to talk about Pretty Rhythm Rainbow Live, the third season of the Pretty Rhythm franchise from 2013. And I'm very excited to have on a new guest. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Harz, though I'm mostly known by my own name, Pretty Kuma, on Twitter. I'm a professional TV translator. I'm 27 and I go by he, him.
Awesome. Great. Yes, I have definitely wanted to have you on the podcast for a while, as you are a big Magical Girl fan. Yeah, when you brought up, you mentioned Pretty Rhythm, I was like, great, we have to start getting this show on the podcast. There's a lot to cover, so it's a pretty long series as well.
That really is.
Yeah. But before we get into that, what is your history with the Magical Girl genre?
Well, it kind of started when I was in elementary school. My first exposure to the genre was like the witch comics. There was like this this magazine that my sister read that had the comics serialized, and I pretty much just stole the issues from her just to follow the how the story was going on. And I was just kind of fascinated, you know, by pretty much this you know, this feminine spin on the superhero genre, and you know, this idea of ordinary kids saving the day and all. Mm. And well, I just figured, oh yeah, it's just witch thing. But then a few years later, the cartoon channels over here began to show Winx Club and our dub of Tokyo Mew Mew. And that's when I really understood, oh, there's a lot more of this out there. And well, I kind of really ate that up and got really into it. But then, you know, there was kind of a period when I was in middle school where, you know, being a boy and all, I tried to be on the down low about still liking that stuff. But then in high school, I got completely into Sailor Moon. And from there, I found out about Pretty Cure. And here I am.
Yeah, great. And just for anyone who doesn't know, if you're comfortable sharing, where are you from?
I am from Northern France.
Hmm. Just important context, because every place has a little different access to magical girls. But of course, France is, yeah.
Yes, definitely. So that's kind of why my first big exposure to the genre with the Italian magical girls, because there was one more readily available here. Mm. You know, our dub of Mew Mew wasn't exactly, you know, the it was kind of an hybrid between the 4Kids dub and the original Japanese. Like, we had plot points from the Japanese with the 4Kids footage. And then they finished dubbing season 2 with the Japanese footage.
That's interesting. But that makes sense, because, yeah, the 4Kids dub in the US never finished covering all of Tokyo Mew Mew.
Yeah. I remember when I was a kid, I was kind of confused, like, hey, why don't they play Animal Instinct when they transform anymore?
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, that dub was something, but the insert songs were pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Does that mean like the opening song was like a French version of the English song?
Well, for the first half of the show, we got a French dub of the English opening. Mm-hmm. Comment imaginer ce qui pouvait arriver? But then for the second half, we got a French dub of My Sweetheart.
Oh, very interesting.
Something like that.
Sounds good. I definitely have to go look those up and listen to them. But yeah, so I guess, what is your relationship to magical girls these days?
Well, around 10 years ago, I started watching Smile Precure as it was airing. And from there on, I got to admit, it's this franchise in particular that completely consumed my life. And to this day, it's true that I know that I work and stuff. I don't really have a lot of free time to watch a lot of shows anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still watched, you know, a lot of Magical Girl shows, like, well, especially, you know, Pretty Rhythm, some of the classics like Minky Momo and Creamy Mummy. But yeah, lately, the only thing I really keep up with is Precure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still a huge fan of Sailor Moon, especially the manga. So I've been really looking forward to Cosmos.
Yes, it's quite delightful. I noticed that people are really gunning to get Cosmos in theaters, and I think it would be interesting.
I worry a little bit, and I don't know if this is true for Eternal, but like Cosmos, while a lot of fun, is kind of impossible to follow if you don't already know the source material. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, personally, I think that it was a mistake to make the shift from a series to movies for the Crystal reboot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first, I'm not really a fan at all of the fact that it's just a straight adaptation of the manga. Hmm. I think a lot of people take issue with that. I mean, I love the manga, but I just think that they don't really use the benefit of foresight of the series being finished to do anything clever, and I think that's a bit disappointing.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's a fair criticism. Great. So, yeah, I do think, I mean, I think it's quite obvious that it'll at least be on streaming or something, I'm sure, by the end of the year. But it'll be interesting to see how much folks get to enjoy it. But yeah, so getting into today's topic of Pretty Rhythm. So we're talking about Rainbow Live specifically, but for anyone who is not familiar with this particular franchise. So this is a franchise that is primarily an arcade game that has TV shows attached to it. So this is an arcade game from Takanatomi. The first one, actually, Pretty Rhythm Miniskirt, never got a series. I think there was some comics or something like that to go along with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the character Rhythm was then the main character in Aurora Dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, yes, in 2011, we got Pretty Rhythm Aurora Dream, which was like the beginning of the franchise. And ever since then, there has always been some Pretty Rhythm show. This has become now known as the Pretty series or Prism. Mm-hmm. It did finally end with the first season of Wacha Primaji, and we are all hoping and praying that that'll come back. We don't know what's going on there. Also, Idleland, Prepar, or Idle Time, I don't remember which one of those.
It was Idle Time, yeah.
Yes.
It was like a soft reboot, pseudo-sequel.
Yeah, I just remember that I was like, oh, this one is on YouTube, so it's very easy to access. Why don't I watch this? And then all of my Pretty Rhythm, like Pretty Series loving friends were like, don't do it, don't do it. You don't know anything.
Yeah,
like,
okay. It's pretty much an epilogue to Prepara, but it's chronologically confused about itself.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. As we'll talk about today, like there's a lot of stuff about this franchise that is a little out there, but...
I mean, yeah. It is part of its identity. It's just a completely bonkers franchise when you look. you can't judge it on the same standard, I think, as other idol anime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so after Aurora Dream, this got a sequel, Pretty Rhythm Dear My Future. It's like a time skip sequel in 2012.
Mm-hmm. Centering around new girls.
Yes. And then this third season was the first to focus on entirely new characters. So you could say... this is the Futariwa Precure Splash Star of Pretty Rhythm, in a way.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. And basically there's almost no crossover except that the idol group Prismy, who kind of like debuted through this franchise, continues to sing the opening and ending songs for the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty much a reiterating on the rules established of this in the precedent series, but... kind of given them a new twist, and it's kind of a core theme of the show that they are keeping it fresh, basically.
But yeah, so since it is completely separate, there isn't really a lot that you need to know about the first two seasons. You could skip them. In fact, a lot of people told me to skip Dear My Future. It was fine. It was a wild ride, but I survived.
Yeah, I also started with Rainbow Live. Mm.
Yeah, so it's cool to have that, you know, if you want to go back and watch it, it's fine, but you don't need it if you want to jump into Rainbow Live for yourself. But basically, the main thing about this series is the Prism Jumps. So we have these shows where these girls sometimes just dance, sometimes they dance and sing on ice skates, and then they jump, during which it's like a kind of magic performance where they're like channeling energy, they're kind of creating illusions or manifesting things. They're all kinds of different things. And then in the second series, in DMR Future, this evolves into the Prism Act, which is where one or many performers create this entirely different stage show. It's all just completely absurd in a way. But it's still like, you know, an elevation. And then finally in this season, we get the consecutive Prism Jumps, which is like you do one and then you do another and you keep doing it.
It is such an arcade game mechanic.
Yes. This is all about, you know, selling the arcade game. But yeah, so, you know, before we get into the actual plot of the story, what is your history with the Pretty series?
Well, I kind of started watching Pre-Para around, like, I think it was 2015 or 2016. Mm-hmm. I actually had already tried other, you know, similar shoujo idol anime before, like Aikatsu, but I couldn't say it really was for me, you know. I mean, I'm a grown-ass man, so I do absolutely love seeing, you know, girls getting into shenanigans, but Aikatsu, you know what, maybe not for me in that... It's such a feel-good, cutesy show that doesn't really have anything in terms of drama or plot.
Sure.
So I was mostly curious about Pretty Rhythm because I really liked the songs.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave the show a try, and it was a lot more bonkers than I imagined it would be. It was kind of really out there, like the world building it has, the intertwining storylines. You know, I localize soap operas for a living, and they're about this level of completely bonkers.
Yeah, it's really fascinating because, well, I didn't really know any of that when I got into things. So, like, I always knew I wanted to watch Pretty Rhythm in general, like anything in the franchise. And it was just kind of a daunting task as it got bigger and bigger. And then I actually started to watch with Watcha Primanji when it started to air on TV, because that was like the first confirmed Magical Girl show. So it made sense for at least the podcast to keep up with it and watch it. And I really enjoyed it. I had no idea how much of it was like tied to, you know, tropes of the series in general or anything like that.
Right. Yeah.
But it was, you know, it was a fun time, and I was like, okay, so now it's time. And I actually also did the same thing with Aikatsu. I was kind of watching a little bit of both shows. There are some interesting similarities and differences, because those are like the two competing, you know, idol shows. Like, this is like undeniably an idol series. We can get into in a minute, like the discussion about it being a Magical Girl series, because it is debated. But in general, like, it's very much, you know, it's an idol show for kids. And I don't know if the fall of both Aikatsu and Pretty Rhythm is because of that. Like, I think the main difference to me between the two is that Pretty Rhythm being an arcade game, Aikatsu also has an arcade game, but like as far as like the marketing and stuff goes, it seems to have always been geared towards both the kids and adults. That also is like kind of clear in, I want to say, the first two seasons more than this one, which has a new character designer, that there's like some changes in terms of the kind of like fashion and stuff. I want to say there's a bit more of like appealing to adults in the first two seasons than there is in this season.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
But like in general, there's a, you know, this kind of feeling compared to Aikatsu that like this is acknowledging that it's supposed to be, you know, more than just a show for young girls to get into idols. And one thing I noticed about magical idols in general, while kind of like learning more and studying more like the history of the magical girl genre in general, is there seems to be like waves of it where there was a huge boom in the 80s, but like things fell off. Like there was a very distinct marketing loss of interest in idols in general. For kids, anyway.
And then the boom restarted in the 2010s,
Yeah, so...
Basically.
It's really fascinating because at this point, you know, Aikatsu is so dead that, like, I think in Bandai Namco's latest, like, sales reports, they didn't even list Aikatsu at all. So, like, apparently...
Oh, boy.
They just, like, whatever.
It's kind of unfair. Like, they should be, like, you know, celebrating 10th anniversary stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they did do, like, there was a movie that they did for that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm sure it's for longtime fans of Aikatsu, it is kind of sad to see it go.
That must be really frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, and then likewise with the Pretty series, it's like technically functioning in that the game for Watcha Primanji is still going, but there hasn't been any new content. It seems like kind of confusing because it's not clear.
Yeah. Well, there's that Pre-Para mobile game that's coming soon.
Yeah, coming soon for 3 years now.
Well. Yeah. Apparently.
Yes, allegedly. We'll see what happens there. It's like also kind of on its last leg there. It's interesting to see like how things have kind of died out again. So I don't know what that means for magical idols going forward.
It is pretty interesting because back in like 2014, 2015, I saw a lot of noise, especially on the Tumblr or LiveJournal, where people were like, oh, Precure is so dead. Oh, Precure is so doing idols any year now. And well, see how that turned out.
Yes. Well, that would have been the correct time because I believe it was either 2014 or 2015, there was like an Aikatsu item, like an Aikatsu toy that outsold all the Precure toys.
Right, I think it was like the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's probably why Maple had the phone in the All-Stars that year.
Yeah, so it was like, so I could understand thinking there was going to be a change, but obviously it seems like Precure is here to stay.
Oh, definitely. It's going to bury us all.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, just to kind of cover as well, like the recognition of this as a magical idol series, because it is highly debated. So throughout, from my understanding, the entire franchise, there is magic, like even from the first season, mm-hmm. while a lot of the magical elements are not explained until this season, we do have, you know, characters that get like magical little mascots, some of whom talk, mm-hmm. and there's this kind of clear delineation of like, yeah, these are mascots that are like not normal to have, so like they're disguised as plushies, you know, the classic fashion of many magical girl shows. And then like the prism jumps themselves are clearly like them using magic, even though they don't like have a transformation sequence or anything like that. Like yeah, they kind of transform into their costume, but it's not quite the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. They use like the terminals that looks like the arcade machine to transform into their idol selves. Mm-hmm. I mean, or rather to put on the outfits that they choose themselves with the stones. It's, yeah.
Yeah, so for some people, this is not enough for it to be a magical girl show where it's like, oh, well, they don't transform, but they do transform in later pretty series. And then also, like, because they don't, like, say they're using magic is the other thing.
Yeah, they are using the shine of the prism, or I'm not sure how it's translated.
Right.
The radiance.
But you know, as they're doing these prism jumps, like it's not just like, I mean, if it was just an illusion, it'd be one thing, because like for example in Aikatsu it's all tech, like they're doing very similar things in Aikatsu.
That's one thing I think Aikatsu is very consistent with. It's showing us you know, backstage stuff and stuff, and just acknowledging that basically there's nothing magical going on.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know what the later seasons are, but I've seen the most of the original and then a bit of Stars, but that's basically how it goes.
Yes. So, you know, with that, it's like there's that clear distinction in Pretty Rhythm. It's like not that at all. And then the other thing is like, I think for me, the main reason why I decided it was like definitely that was like a lot of the events of the first season. And then also there is a prism jump that I don't think comes back, actually, now that I think about it, where like they summon a bunch of like chocolate and like people are eating the chocolate afterwards. So it's like, okay, this is like actually doing some sort of magic manifestation.
Yeah, they are actually conjuring stuff up, and they can even like, I think like influence people's emotions.
Yes.
We'll get to that, but basically there are a few instances of prism jumps having consequence for both the performer and the audience.
Yeah, even that's something that we've seen in the previous seasons as well. But yeah, so getting into the actual story. So like we said, things are like not really explained magic-wise in the first two seasons. But right away, we start off in this season with this girl with like blue hair who's just kind of casually skating down a rainbow with this little bird and clearly having a great time until everything around her starts to break and she kind of just falls through this portal and ends up in our world. And you know, in so doing, a whole bunch of rainbows show up around town, and we kind of see like six different girls also notice those rainbows. So we have two sets of three girls throughout the show. So first we have the kind of workers of the Prism Stone, which is like the main store, which is throughout the franchise, and is also the store in real life to buy pretty serious stuff.
Happy Rain.
And so we have, Happy Rain, the members, the main member being Naru, who's our pink girl. She's quite adorable. She also can't do prism jumps at the beginning of the series, which is very interesting because she does her first prism show and literally just does not jump. Instead, the blue haired girl, who we later find out is named Yurinde, jumps for her. In particular, she does a 4 consecutive prism jump, which had never been seen before. So everyone's
It was done by Junae Hamo, the top idol of the world, the Creon Prism Queen, which is a title that carried over from the previous series.
Yes.
But yeah, she Junae was the first one to do 4 consecutive jumps. But otherwise, you know, it's like setting a new record in a sport, basically. I mean,
right.
That's one thing I really like about Rainbow Live, that Prism shows are, I mean, it's basically a sports anime. Prism shows are basically something that that everybody does, even in school, and it's just you do Prism shows like you do basketball.
yes.
So it was cool.
Mm-hmm. So Naru's our main girl, and then we have On. She's kind of like, I guess, blue coated, and she's an interesting girl who like has a whole thing with her father, where her father runs a senbei shop, and she has to like make senbei, which are like Japanese rice crackers. She doesn't want to. She wants to make sweets. She can do prism jumps because she actually does them at school. She's in like a prism show club at school. So she ends up joining the prism stone and becoming the sweets maker there. Mm-hmm. And then we have Ito, who also likes to be called cloth on a, or
cross. Yeah.
I think it's kind of a pun on both words.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, she's a musician as well. Her father used to be in a big band and owns a performance. Yeah, I guess a live house. I guess that's like, the best way to say it.
A venue, I guess you could say.
Yeah. A music venue called Lucky Star. But he is no longer performing, and she has feelings about that. Mm-hmm. But she joins the Prism Stone as a makeup expert. Mm-hmm. And basically, the three of them have to help run this store for approximately a year, maybe longer. It's not quite clear at the beginning anyway.
It's like some kind of apprentice shape.
Yes. The owner, Momo, who is quite an interesting lady, has very strong feelings about like, you know, what is right and wrong about like the shop, and is like very serious about what needs to be, you know, done and all of that. She also is very interested in fashion design. And there's also DJ Ku, who's like this very interesting guy.
They stole a real guy.
Yes. Oh, it's so funny. It's spelled with a different letter, right?
Yeah, it's a C, but the real DJ Ku is written with a K. But I forgot the name of the band he is from. I think it was the original performers of the opening Boys Meet Girls, but I forgot their name.
Yeah, so it is like a kind of totally acceptable, like, kind of copy of this guy in her life. He uses so much tanner, he's like orange all the time. It's weird. Anyway, but basically the main thing is that like he wears like a red jacket, has silver hair, and always has glasses on, and like uses a lot of English.
Cool.
So this is like the Prism Stone side of things, with these three girls who are doing but both like prism shows, but also like working the store. And then at the same time, we also have three girls from Edel Rose, who is like, this is like the school for doing prism shows, and it's like very elite. And these three girls are like the top of the top, and they're all friends. So we have Belle, who's got bright red hair, and she is like the queen bee of the group, and she's a bit rude to her friends, to be perfectly honest, and everyone else.
Yes, she very much starts out as I don't know if you've read Glass Mask, but Ayumi.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have yet to read it, but
She's pretty much, you know, the rival character who thinks who basically worked to be where she is, and she intends to stay, basically.
Right. Yes. And her other like friends / teammates, whatever you want to call them at the beginning. Their friendship, they are friends, but their friendship is not quite visible at the beginning of the series. We have Wakana, who is very green and very cat-like. she's a kind of fun little gremlin girl. And then we have Otoha. She's all in yellow. She's blonde and has like just the smallest, quietest voice, and she loves tea, and she loves like fairy tale things. Yes.
She's so cute.
Yes, but she's like very, very sensitive and always very terrified of getting Belle angry in particular. But they're all like clearly, you know, a unit in any case. They're always spending their time together. We do see like the origins of their friendship throughout the show, and they really are friends. They're just in a bad place at the moment.
I do like how, you know, at first we just see them always hang out and being kind of normal friends. Then when we start getting into the nitty-gritty of their character arcs, this is where you see that something's not quite right, and maybe it's a bit unbalanced and dysfunctional. But it's all stuff that the show addresses.
Yes. So, like, with the three of them, like, yeah, it's quite interesting. They also kind of usually work for and represent Deer Crown, which is the kind of rival brand to Prism Stone, which is also from mm-hmm. the previous season. And what we kind of see is, like, they're rivals in the story, though, as far as you know, like, especially Belle is concerned, like, none of these girls are her competition at all. And we can see, in general, there's a lot of, like, really just bad vibes, bad chemistry with everyone at this school. Everyone is so focused on becoming the best that they're kind of all rivals with each other.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and this season also has a lot of male characters, I should point out. Like, there always have been in the previous seasons as well, but this is the first time that, like, they become, like, major characters, and this season even has a spin-off featuring said guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, we have, I guess the main three, we have Hito, who is very also full of himself, just like Belle, and will do anything that he thinks he needs to do to get to the top. And he also kind of has a romance with Belle on and off. Like, it's not really, like, it's, like, clear there's feelings there, but nothing actually happens.
Yeah, and we can't really be sure of how, you know, reciprocated that is.
Right, right. Mm. But it is there. I think it's, like, quite clear we're meant to interpret things that way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Hero has really two people he's obsessed with. That's Belle, and that's the second boy we will get to.
Yes, Koji. Koji is this kind of brooding guy who no longer goes to Edel Rosa. He left, and in particular, he left because of his friendship with Hito falling out. They were performing together. They were supposed to debut together, but Hito had claimed to have written a piece of music that Koji wrote, and naturally, he feels very offended by this. So that, like, got him to just really feel like, you know, he was done with Prism shows, done with music, etc. But he kind of, like, mostly spends his time, like, playing guitar on the rooftop near near Ito's house. So, like, she hears him a lot, and Nada also notices him at one point. He does ask him to write music for her.
He does end up becoming, you know, the go-to song guy for the entire cast, really.
Yes, yes. It's clear he's a very good songwriter, which is, you know, that's an important member of the team to have if you're going into idol stuff. You know, you need to have a friend like that.
And, like, the poetry it takes to write, I'll be happy, happy, not a...
I mean, the fact that he can write in different people's voices like that is very impressive. That is a skill for a songwriter to have.
That is true. That is true. I'm just being mean.
Yeah. But in any case, the third guy that we spend a lot of time with is Kazuki, who also doesn't go to the school anymore. But he's all, like, about street prism shows, which is such a funny concept. So, like, he kind of helps run this community space for people to freely go in and try doing prism shows on their own and all of that. And he's like, yeah, he's just, like, a really cool guy. And also both Anna and Wakana kind of have, like, feelings for him that develop throughout the show. In particular, he is, like, childhood friends with Anna, as we find out early in the show. So,
and he technically also knew Wakana, but he didn't know it was her. It's
yes, we'll get into that. But yeah, so, like, the beginning of the show, we have, like, you know, this very big set of characters, and Rina, as you mentioned, after she fell from this other place that we don't even really know about at the beginning, we see that she has to learn to live in this world that she clearly doesn't know a lot about.
And yeah. Whatever happened to her on the Rainbow Road also kind of made her, you know, a little bit, you know, catatonic, you say?
Yeah.
She just speaks in very short sentences and is a bit cold at times, and she doesn't get social cues, and well,
yeah.
You could also read, you know, that maybe she's a bit on the spectrum, and that Prism shows is what makes her go out of her shell. But
yes. And at the kind of beginning of the series, the other thing we get is, of course, we need our mascots. So we do get a whole bunch of episodes featuring each character where, you know, one by one, they do get their own little fairies, these adorable little colorful penguins.
Yeah.
They all seem to be, like, kind of matching each of the girls with, like, their own vibes. Like, they kind of all, like, fit with each character pretty well. And it's clear that like it takes a lot for them to kind of like get the power to kind of earn that mascot in a way.
Yes, yes. And because when they get that mascot, do you want to say it?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's important to the Prism show because they can actually get, for one, a new outfit, which is very important, but also they can do something called a Prism Live, which is a very new, never before seen phenomenon where their penguin becomes a musical instrument of their choice, something that suits them. And they like just do an even bigger performance, and that leads into their prism jumps and usually will lead them to be able to do more prism jumps, which is important.
Exactly, yeah. It's basically the fever mode of the arcade game.
Yeah, it's interestingly so new that the first time it happens, like Naru doesn't even get points for it because the judges don't even know what to do with this new new phenomenon. Yeah.
I find it interesting because that kind of ties into this this theme of change that the show has.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the rules of the heart were dictated for ages as being the same, and then you got that bunch of girls who come and basically decide to have new things take center stage, and it's clear that they're not recognized the way they should be. And this segues into something that happened in the last episode, but I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yes. In any case, it's very exciting to see over time, everyone seems to be earning these things. And also with the three Edel Rose girls who later become the group known as Belle Rose, both Wakana and Otoha also get to earn their own as they are kind of separated from Belle for a while, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
For various reasons, they end up having to kind of spend time away from her, and that helps them to kind of figure out their own stuff and earn them their own penguins. And it's all very exciting because they each all have like different instruments, right? So Naru uses a guitar and An uses like drumsticks.
Drums, yeah. It was a piano.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I was still so shocked by Otoha having a saxophone. That really blew my mind.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that from her, but it's like so wonderful. This is, again, like the kind of levels of this franchise in general. It's like, I'm always just completely surprised.
I remember the epic sax girl memes.
And then Wakana also uses kind of like a xylophone.
I think it's a marimba. I'm not sure.
Oh, that makes sense to me. I'm not sure if it was meant to be a specific one, but I'm not a percussionist. I'm sure if I asked my drummer brother, he would be able to tell me exactly what it is. But it's all very exciting. And then we see that there is another egg because like these penguins do show up as eggs first, kind of like waiting on Belle to, this is something that has to happen, but it's not quite happening.
Yeah, as everybody gets their penguin, Belle gets a bit more and more angsty that she's the only one who can do Prism Live.
Yes.
But it's clear that she's the only one also who's kind of stagnating.
Hmm.
Like, her frustration makes her increasingly bitter, and she got a whole lot of other personal circumstances that make her, that basically prevent her from going forward and try to take the risks necessary to get her penguin.
Hmm. Yes, and we do see that one of the reasons for this is that she's under a lot of pressure, especially from her mother, who is constantly, telling her, like, obviously you need to do your best. Of course you can do, like, everyone else is doing these Prism Lives, so of course you can do it because you are the best. And Belle's like, of course, Mom, yeah, no problem. And she's, like, secretly terrified. And it's, like, kind of scary to see her, like, clearly, stressed about this
almost definitely. She completely loses it. It's like,
yes,
it's really horrible. I mean, it was hard to watch at time, especially when there was one episode where she had the complete meltdown in her trailer, before a show, and it was right before she like completely failed to do a Prism Live and got completely berated by her mother as a result.
Yes. It's like this, terrifying kind of situation to be in because she's in front of all these people and like failing to do this thing that she promised she would do, that her mother promised everyone she would do. Very upsetting. Yeah. Like, I have like mixed feelings about Belle's character.
Yeah, same. I feel that it wanted to go places. Like, I think we can talk about where the arc goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
The way this storyline resolves at first with the support of Wakana and Otoa, Belle basically tells her mother that she's not her doll, that she can't pressure her anymore, that she's had it. And that's basically what she needed to get her penguin. Mm-hmm. But then later on, they backtrack on this.
Hmm.
Then later on, you got the whole competition where they're performing in pairs. And, well, it's still very, even if Naru is there, it's still very much a Belle episode. Mm. And, well, the conclusion they come to is basically that, she was wrong to think her mom didn't love her. And I don't know. The woman never apologized. And really, that bothers me a lot because this storyline had a lot of potential.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, there's a lot, especially... Not just with Belle, also with, like, Wakana's parents, where, like...
Well, Wakana's it a bit better, I guess.
Yeah, just, like, the way that they write the characters are, like... Okay, it's very clear that Belle is, like, kind of terrible to everyone because she's dealing with a lot of pain and a lot of pressure and bullying from her own family. And honestly, like, the way her mother talks to her, it's, like, definitely troublesome. And, like, I would call someone if I saw a parent talking that way to their kid. Like, that's kind of terrible. And yeah, like you said, like, there isn't really, like, a full kind of, like, apologetic moment, really, with them.
Yeah, it's just, don't you dare think I don't love you. It's, okay.
It's, like, it's not really sending a good message to kids who might be going through, like, dealing with parents like that.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the case, they need to see, like, the first resolution, but not the second one.
Yeah.
I wonder to which point this is, like, you know, network execs softening it up. Or if the writers were just, you know, not having a good day, a good one.
Yeah, it's hard to know, like, exactly how far along they might have made changes like that. You'd have to, like, go to, like, contemporary interviews or something like that. Maybe to get that kind of information, it's kind of hard to say. But in any case, it's an unfortunate thing that they tried to go somewhere with it, and they kind of, you know, took a step back when they might.
Yeah.
And I can see at the same time, like, trying to deal with it in a realistic way might be too much for the audience at home, like kids at home. So that might also be another reason why they would go with the kind of, like, happy ending kind of situation, because that is also a thing they have to keep in mind. But yeah, so with Belle, you know, this is kind of like the middle of the show. So she's working on trying to, like, you know, decide whether or not she wants to leave, because her mother was like, you have to quit Prism shows because this was so embarrassing. We're going to France right now and you're going to be a violinist, which is like,
no, don't come here.
I mean,
there's nothing there.
I'm sure that there would have a place for her, whatever, but it was clearly not what she wanted. And it was like
being separated from her friend would have just made
it worse. Like, that being the main thing. And, like, this point, we also see that, like, their friendship is, like, coming back together. Wakana also is dealing with a lot of stuff at this point, because we learned that, you know, she had moved to this area when she was younger and then moved away. And there was all this confusion about, like, her being able to perform a Prism show when they were all, like, really young, and them being, like, Kazuki and An in particular. And so she had, like, this long pent up frustration against this girl, and, like, she didn't even know that it happened, right? And then Kazuki kind of figures out what happened. It was something that he had decided at the time. And, like, she didn't remember that, like, she was sick and that had happened. It's kind of interesting because it's like, you know, when something traumatic happens, sometimes, like, you forget a lot of extra context, I guess. It was it was an interesting kind of, like, plot. Again, very soap
opera. It was a little bit relatable because I guess we all went through that kind of drama when we were little kids, you know, where it's clear that the problem is mostly, like, poor communication. And
yeah, absolutely. It was, like, kind of nice to see because, you know, they were kind of posed as enemies for a while, and Wakana definitely clearly felt a lot of ways about An, and An was like, I don't know what's going on here, but all right. You know, their back and forths are, you know, kind of entertaining because, like, they both don't take anything from the other. So it's just silly. But yeah, that gets sorted out. And it kind of tells us, like, what we're going to get from the rest of the show with a lot of these kinds of situations. And there's also, you know, stuff with, like, Otoha and Belle. Because, again, like, Belle was, at the beginning of the series, like, so terrible to Otoha all the time. It was like...
Oh, definitely. Like, you know, that point where you can tell that they started as good friends, but then that one took the other for granted, basically. And that maybe she's a bit, like, you know, taking out her frustration on her. Like, it's especially obvious when I forgot what it was that Otoa messed up, but basically, from then on, Bell decided that she was out of the team. And they even tried to replace her and rub it into her face. It was, I think this is Bell at her lowest.
Yes. It's one of those, like, I guess hurt people things. Yeah, it was definitely, like, really hard to watch because it was, like, this whole thing of, like, Otoha being like, well, if I still show that I care about Bell, then Bell's going to get better. And that's what happens, which is, like, a terrible message.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And especially when, I forgot what it was that awakened Otoha's penguin, but yeah, I think it was deciding to come back after everything. Like, yeah, that's also pretty shaky, I think, especially since we spent so much time with Ito telling her to grow a spine.
Yeah, for sure. Oh. Yeah, there's like a lot of all these different things, and Naru is also getting, you know, stronger and stronger. And also, like, kind of her friendship with Rinne in general is developing a lot because, like, while she's here, Rinne is staying at Naru's house. And we do find out about midway through the first half that she is from the prison world, and she's a messenger from the prison world. And we also find out by this point that Momo is actually also a penguin. Like, Haiden is like basically like a robot body, and that manipulates that. It's kind of funny.
The
beginning, she tries very hard to pretend she's a normal human, but then like goes into this really goofy voice, and it's just fun.
Momo.
Yes.
Yeah. We find out she was basically DJ Ku's per friend from where he was a Prism Star.
Yes.
We find out also that the mission of the people from Prism World is basically to make sure that the shine of the Prism is spread throughout the world. And
yes,
I guess that means that feelings of excitement and stuff keep circulating.
Yes.
So more Prism show can happen.
Yeah, so before we get more into that stuff, I do want to kind of make this little spoiler point for anyone who hasn't checked out the show yet. It is a lot. It is heavy sometimes. It is definitely like a soap opera in so many ways, but it is a fun time. So if you haven't checked it out, I do recommend it. There's still a lot more drama to come in the second half of the show. So yes.
Very much so.
So we get like the, you know, midway through the show, we're like in the trios performing together, right? Bellrose and
Their rivality is kind of put in parentheses, and they they all basically all six of them begin to hang out more often.
Yes. And then also we see that there's Peacock, the main white, like, looks like a penguin, but is actually a peacock, I guess, guy that we had seen with Rinne at the beginning of the series, but in like dreams he does talk to Momo about how she needs to remember this thing called the seventh chord, and chord isn't short for coordination. It's used a lot in Japanese fashion, and it's very important to get the seventh chord in order to get the Prism Sparkle out into the world, and in so doing return Rinne back to Prism World, because like she needs to be back basically in order to make sure that like everything is okay in their world. Like, if she stays for too long, then basically once the sparkle is gone, then people won't be able to do Prism shows anymore. But yeah, let's see. Now that everyone in Bellrose is like all made up and friends, like now all six of them can like hang out and stuff, or like be more friendly together. So like there's a whole thing where Happy Rain goes on a field trip to Hokkaido, and they also get to spend time with Ito's mother and brother.
Yes.
Yeah.
Early Bell cameo for King of Prism.
Yes. And then at the same time, Bellrose decides that they're going to take care of the Prism Stone. And turns out Bell is not really good as a manager.
So, yeah. It was a kind of a blessing in disguise that she didn't get the job.
Yes.
She would have had her meltdown much earlier.
Yes, because she was one of the many people who did apply for the job at the beginning of the show.
And well, if it weren't for Rinne, she might have gotten it. Because since Momo seemed to have only evaluated performances.
Yeah, but in any case, we get to learn a lot more about Ito's family situation at this point while they're in Hokkaido. We knew from the very beginning of the series that her parents were separated and her mother and brother lived afar. And she has been convinced all this time that if only her father would start playing guitar again, then her mother would come back. And it's not quite that they're divorced, they're just separated, and it's clear that they still love each other. So we find out in this episode, in episode 30, that the reason for this is that, you know, there was a car accident when they were younger, and Ito's father had caused their family friend to die. And
the family friend in question being
Koji's father.
Exactly.
Yes.
Oh, and by this point, there was like a, you know, a kind of a little romance storyline between Ito and Koji, and they were basically dating. But finding out about this kind of caused Koji's mom to get involved and say that basically she didn't improve their relationship.
Yes.
This is like the height of a stock soap opera drama.
Yes, absolutely. Like, this is honestly, for me, I mean, despite the finale drama, which is also very big, the kind of like main, the biggest drama of this season for me is this romance, right? Where it's like very clear they love each other. They, you know, we actually got to see very clearly that they were a good fit for each other long before we got any of this drama, which was pretty well written, I do admit. But yes, this new drama and finding it like, oh, like my dad accidentally killed your dad. What do we do about this? And like your mother doesn't want us together. And like Ito's father also likewise doesn't really want them to be together either.
Yeah.
You know, and
it takes him some convincing.
Yes, yes. And it's also like, oh, the reason why they split is so that like there's this idea that like their family can never be happy in order to like placate the fact that this family can also never be happy. It's like really wild. Yeah.
Definitely.
But yes, and then speaking of romance, we also get a little bit more, with Kazuki and Anin Wakana.
Yeah.
It's becoming more and more clear that like there's, yeah, this kind of like love triangle situation, right? The girls are aware. Kazuki is not aware.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Kazuki doesn't know. And it's, can I spoil a little ahead for something you probably haven't seen?
Sure.
It comes back in King of Prism as something of a running gag.
Oh, okay.
Where we occasionally see Anon Wakana still fighting over him.
Oh, okay.
And he's completely oblivious.
Wow, okay. Yes, so, I mean, he's a cool guy. I get it. But, yeah, it's really funny to see that, like, these two are just, like, constantly competing with each other over this guy who, like, has no idea.
I do like that it doesn't impede their friendship. Like, they don't hate each other. They don't try to sabotage each other.
Yes.
They try to play the fair game, you know?
Yes, that's true.
They're just waiting for this dum-dum to make up his mind.
Definitely. But yeah, so, you know, we also get a little bit more of Wakana's story. Like I said before, Wakana's family situation is also quite strange, where we see in the time where they were doing duos with everyone, the duos kind of like spent a night at each other's homes in order to get to know them more and stuff. So we get a lot more understanding of Wakana's home life, which is like so different from Wakana's own personality. She's like very quiet and reserved, and her mother is also very quiet and reserved and like works really hard for her father, who is like really strict and like, you know, very serious.
The stock salaryman.
It's again, like just really not a great home life. It's very clear that it's like just every day, every moment together is like all this tension and it's very uncomfortable. This also means that like for her father, like work is the most important thing. And, you know, we find out in episode 33 that, like, his job is going to take him to Singapore. And so there's this idea like, well, okay, that means everyone has to move. And, yeah, Wakana doesn't want to leave, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she kind of understands that, like, for her father, like, her prison shows don't seem to be important. And so it's, like, a big deal. And then, finally, her mother kind of breaks, basically.
Yes, yes. She's the one who decides that it's unfair to her and snaps because she doesn't dare to.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of wild. And then, like, after that, we find that, like, she used to be, like, a delinquent woman and her father used to be, like, a lot more laid back. But, like, because he had wanted to be, like, a good salaryman for his wife that he loved, she decided she wanted to be, like, a good housewife because she loved him. And it was like, oh, my God. The communication needs to happen. Like, this is wild. And this is trauma.
Most definitely.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so it was just like, okay. Yeah, I mean, obviously things are better after the fact, but it was really wild to see that personality shift, especially with her mom. But it, in a way, was kind of like rewarding.
Yeah, it's just kind of cute, you know, it's like, oh, that's why she's like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where she gets that from.
Yes, yes. As the girls all like work together with their duos, the final duo being, of course, Naru and Belle, like all their duo songs and stuff are super fun. And
oh, God. Yes. I love Alive. Alive is just one of my favorite songs in the show.
Yes. So like Otoha and Ito's, you know, vibes are very different, but they have like this like prince and princess thing going on with that performance.
Oh, yes. Very much so.
You know, Otoha jumps into Ito's arms and they say, shall we dance? But then they look to the audience and it's like, oh, okay. And then, of course, you know, like Ito has like this major like love romance, like whole plot with Koji and all that. But it's like really wild.
I do like that. I mean, I know that a lot of people ship Ito with Otoha, but I do like her dynamic as like the matchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Like hearing that Ito loved Koji got her like all happy and squeaky, and basically she really wanted to know everything about him, and
yes,
well, I thought it was cute that she was so supportive. Kind of reminded me of Tomoyo from Sakura.
Oh, sure. Yeah, there could be some interesting readings of their friendship for sure.
yeah,
but yeah, so you know, this whole part is like very cute and fun, and you know, everyone works together, and yeah, with what's it called, with An and Wakana, like their whole thing is like, with their final duo performance, it's like they both think that like Kazuki has a girlfriend now. Turns out it was just his cousin showed up and happens to be a girl, but they were both like, oh, we have heartbreak, let's use our heartbreak together and make this like, you know, great performance.
And that's the energy they need to get at four jumps.
Yes, it's really wild.
Yeah.
Yes. And then with this you know, duo performance, one of the other things is June, who again is the prism queen at the moment, you know, she had announced like for the first time ever that she was going to do a duo prism show with Rinne. And it's like a big shock, because as far as anyone knows, these two have never interacted before. Why would she know who this girl is?
Mm-hmm. Oh, we are getting into deep spoiler territory now.
Yes, we are. Yes.
And then the best song in the show happens.
Which one would that be for you?
I mean, it's 7 days. It has to be 7 days.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do we do a little intro on June, or do we...
Yeah, if you want to talk about her more.
Well,
yeah.
So June was like always a presence in the show. Like you always got her... Her portrait in the middle of the shopping district. They see it every day when they go to the Prism Stone. But, well, she herself physically is not much of a presence in the show until she announces that she will break her own record and do a 5-jump chain.
Yes.
Which she does after the most over-the-top Prism Live in the world. Other than that, we don't know anything about her. We just know that there's this agent guy, Hijiri, who we know works closely with her. And she's shown maybe to have something of a crush on him. And other than that, she's a complete enigma. Until finally, we get to the big duo performance with Rinne, where they both manage a, I think it was 5 or 6 chain of Prism Jumps. But the thing is, people notice in the audience that they are not really jumping together, like in sync,
right,
in terms of duo performance, and that it's more like they are trying to outperform each other in something of a battle. It all culminates in their last jump, where they all basically fire lasers at each other.
Yes.
I mean, that's straight up a battle. And I think Ijiri even says it directly. And
yes,
that's a minute where very briefly the magic breaks, and we see that June is actually another Prism Messenger with the exact same face as Rinne.
Yes.
So yeah, it's basically a big bit of world building where basically every messenger coming from Prism World is a Rinne at first. And then they take the shape of a person they want to inspire to bring Prism shows to new heights.
Hmm.
And the problem is that it is a bit weird, but June took the appearance of Ijiri's mother to try to inspire him. So yeah, don't read too much into it, but You might want to tell that about to your psychologist, Hijiri. And basically, they kind of fell in love. But then Hijiri, we need to talk about the Norizuki thing.
Yes.
Basically, the grandson of the chairman of Hedal Rose, Jin Norizuki, was also the biggest rival of Hijiri back when he was a Prism Star. But he basically had him sabotaged, so he injured his leg and could never perform again.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, basically when she saw that, June did something that Prism Messenger were never supposed to do, and it is to perform herself.
Yes.
So there's like this poignant scene where she's called back into Prism World, and she tears off her own wings to because she refused to go back. Because she wants to keep performing for the man she loves, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it turns out that it is a really bad idea, because if there's two Prism Messengers in the same world, it could potentially destroy the Prism shine in it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And by this point, at the end of the series, as during like this final Prism show, like this whole thing, tournament, I guess, you know?
Yeah, the Prism Queen thing, yeah.
Yes. You know, we see that like all around Japan, like, the sparkle is dissipating. Like, we see, like, regular people trying to use the arcade machines and they can't. Like, it's like that. It's very funny.
Oh, end of service.
Yes. So it's very clear, like, oh, okay, so this magic, it's, like, necessary for this to be sorted out so that the magic can continue.
I think it's implied that it's, like, important for the survival of the world, too, or something?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, like we can't go on without magical figure skating, guys.
Yes.
I mean, that checks out. We don't have magical figure skating. Our world is a mess.
Oh, yeah, you know, that's a very good point. Yes. You know, it's a really interesting, you know, big shock, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can see, like, her body is kind of disappearing, and Rina as well is, like, trying to figure all this stuff out. Finally, Momo kind of remembers what to do about the seventh chord. And so basically, you know, all six girls have to fight for the Prism Queen title and like take that title from June. That's part of it. And also because, again, there can't be two Rinas in the world, the two of them are like potentially going to merge together at some point.
Yeah, but basically, the reason they were fighting in the during their duo performance was that the winner would basically absorb the other, but they ended on a stalemate.
Yes.
Here.
Mm. You know, Rina also, she also wants to stay very much, in particular because of her friendship with Naru, but also, like, in general, she doesn't want to lose anyone. And it's clear that, like, whoever goes back will lose all their memories as well, which is, like, you know, that's another major factor, because it's not even like, oh, I can just remember my friends forever. It's like, oh, no, I'm not going to remember anything.
Right, yes, because Rinas are basically rebooted every time they are returned to Prism World.
Yes.
So there's just also this stake.
Mm-hmm. And we also find out that, like, all of these little, you know, penguin friends that we've met, plus Starn, who is the one that has been with June during the whole show, all seven of them combined create Peacock. Like, they, you know, summon him in this world. And so it's important to combine the pair friends together in order to kind of reawaken him. And that also involves like them each achieving the seventh chord during their final performances. And it is kind of a stressful time as we get through all these performances. Like, again, because there are, you know, six girls, it takes a while to get through all these performances.
Yeah. But, well, we get their longest chains by far.
Yes.
And all those new prism jumps that they learned, and a last one that culminates into like something that pretty much embodies who they are as people.
Yes.
I especially like Anne's sweets go round, and of course, there's Belle, who achieves her seventh chord and then does a seven consecutive chain.
Yes.
Which I think is the longest in the series. No, wait. June manages a seventh jump.
Yes.
Of her own.
Seventh is like the highest we get to in the whole show.
Mm. I think in the arcade game, it's like over 10.
Oh, goodness. I can imagine. It makes sense that Belle is the one that gets all the way up there, because she is
definitely
like the top of the top, like the best.
Mm. See, this is something I really like, because I feel like, especially compared to Aurora Dream or Dear My Future, where the protagonists were clearly the best,
mm-hmm.
Naru isn't that good at prism shows.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
Yeah, same, because, well, she's a very passive protagonist in the grand scheme of things. Like, other than a relationship with Renee, mm-hmm. she didn't really get, you know, drama with her parents, or she didn't really even really grow as a person. I mean, I'm not saying this as a negative thing, but other than her brief involvement, her crush on Koji that she doesn't even understand until the finale, she doesn't do much. I mean, she's always there to support her friends, but she's just here managing Prism Stone, doing her things. And when she performs, she usually relies on others to push herself further, basically. And that's what I really like, because in a way, I think what she embodies is like the pure enjoyment for the sport. I mean, for the art, for just passion in general. And well, it's not always something that gets recognized, and it's not something that is worthy, like that can be evaluated on the same level as the pros. But I think Chairman Norizuki at the end will say that she should have been Prism Queen, even if the Academy couldn't recognize her performance.
Yes, yes.
So
it's quite interesting. One thing I did notice, or I found when I was doing my own research on, like, kind of like on the fandom stuff in general, is that there's actually a pretty large amount of fans in Japan that don't like Naru. And I think it's like for the same reason, which is so interesting to me. But different people go into these shows for different reasons. So I think that's probably the main thing.
Oh, so they don't like her because she's bad at prism shows?
Yeah, it's like she's like kind of annoying. Oh. And I would say like, I do think that she does know like earlier that she likes Koji kind of, in that like, you know, we do see her interact with him a lot and stuff, and she cries a lot when Ito and Koji first get together, right?
She does, but she doesn't even realize it was a heartbreak until, like, the very end of the show.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting to see that representation. Like, she doesn't fight for her love or anything. She's just like, well, my friend and my crush are together, it's fine. Like, it's like, okay, you know? And then, you know, one thing about her friendship with Nina is that I feel like we didn't really see it a lot.
That is true. That is true. Like, we know they stay at each other's house, and whenever Rene is around, it's because Naru is in the scene with her.
Yes, yes.
But, yeah, they don't really talk. I mean, Rene is pretty nonverbal for most of the show. I mean, at the very least, we do get, you know, a few sweet vignettes, but, yeah, other than that, it's true that maybe the show could have done more with Naru.
I think part of it is the huge cast, because
right,
we have definitely, you know, six main girls. Like, Naru's supposed to be the main one because she's like the star of the show. She's the one in the center. She's pink, right? Like, obviously she's supposed to be the main girl, but
yeah, she's the one who solves everything at the end. And,
yeah, she doesn't really get the spotlight that you would expect, I think. So I remember when it was like first being shown that, like, you know, she and Rina don't want to be apart, I was like, I missed this. When did this happen? Like, I was a little surprised, a little confused. But yeah, I feel like there's a lot like implied, you know, in that way that like they should be, you know, more close perhaps. But yeah, it's interesting.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can say that about a lot of stuff in this show.
Sure, sure. Yes. So we do get like a bunch of plot points kind of all tied together at the end during like all these different shows. Wakana's stuff with her parents like working out is really cute. And then with Ito and Koji, Koji's mother finally gets like more context to explain what happened that day and how like she actually was kind of hiding from herself that like her husband had wanted to go back into music because, like, the band was, they had broken up already before. The band was called Lucky Star, and
music took my husband, basically.
Yeah.
And we are 1 hour into this, and we haven't talked about Hero yet.
Yeah.
Do we have to? Yes.
Hero is unfortunately a very important character, especially at the end, because like he just shows up all the time and he's like always very cocky. But we do find out that like he's kind of being, I don't want to say quite like blackmailed, but he's also under like dealing with corruption and abuse in the school
very
system.
Much so.
This school is so wild. Like it's oh my god, it's the worst. It's
yeah. It's kind of, you know, the less glamorous part of the industry. They don't really sugarcoat it. Or well, first there was the thing that make Koji break their unit. Where basically he had to claim authorship of his song, Pride. Interesting name. Well, it all ties into back into Norizuki, who was, you know, the guy who had Hijiri sabotaged already. So there's hints to other show that this guy is just kind of shady.
Yes.
He kind of has a... And, well, you know, he's also, you know, tall, dark, handsome, and he's always tending to his roses. And we know that turns out in shoujo.
Yeah, he was always, like, really shady. And then we find out at the end, especially because, like, all of a sudden, only students from Edel Rose can perform in the final competition. And it's like, wait, there's something shady going on here. And they're able to find out that, like, there's, like, all this bribery and corruption going on. And it does lead to the girls all being able to perform from Prism Stone. But it was, like, it was so much. And also, like, part of it was, like, Hiro also coming out to his fans, admitting that, you know, he had plagiarized, right? He had claimed authorship, like you said, like, of Koji's song, and he apologized for it. And the fans are, like, kind of okay with it. It's really weird.
Yeah, that's definitely not how it would happen in real life.
Right, right. It's an interesting situation, but he was all like, you know, I apologize, I'm going to retire, like, and it's clear that part of it is, like, he also is in a weird situation where, like, his mother was also, you know, a prism jumper, like, a performer, but she kind of, like, left, like, we don't know where she went for a while.
Yeah, she completely fell off, and it's, like, heavily implied she had to be a prostitute to make ends meet.
Yeah, it's really unclear, but...
Well,
I would say maybe something of that nature, right? They can't say something like that in a show like this, but yeah.
Well, can I spoil you on a little thing from Kinpri?
Oh, actually, yeah, sure, go ahead.
Well, in Kinpri, they basically confirmed it that, yeah, she was a prostitute.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they had to, they took advantage of the change in demographic for this one.
Yes, that makes sense. Yes. Mm. And just to kind of specify, King of Prism, or Kinpri for short, is the spinoff about the boys, in particular, right, the three boys of this series.
Well, it's kind of weird because, well, the first movie is about the three boys. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first two movies. But then the series is about the colorful cast of other boys that they introduce around.
Ah, okay.
One of them being Ito's brother.
Ah, okay. That makes sense. He got into things too, I guess. It's like always happens. The younger brothers of these girls keep getting into prison shows also. But yeah, my understanding of that spin-off is that it's, you know, because it is for an older female audience, it does get really wild. I am intrigued.
So.
I'm interested in getting into it at some point. We'll see.
Well, if you want to have me here again.
For sure. They are, you know, if this is a magical girl series, then that is a magical boy show. So, yes.
Well, we're already stretching the magical girl definition doing magical idols.
Mm-hmm.
So, magical boy idols?
Yeah. So, yeah, we get all the stuff with Ito and Koji. Saw Hiro is kind of like, he's remorseful. And Kazuki decides to forgive him for some reason. And is like, I guess Koji's going to forgive you too. It's, you know, by the end, they're all, yeah.
Yeah, in the end, they become their own unit. And, that's a sequel hook.
Yes, yes. That's the popularity of that unit, literally in the last episode, is the reason for the spinoff, which is wild. But yeah, so, you know, after each girl gets their seventh chord and they're able to get all the sparkle back in the world, you know, everything works out. It gets really, like, kind of stressful at the end, because before Naru can do her performance, like, she's supposed to be the final one. After Juna does her performance, she, like, kind of, like, loses all her power in the middle of the performance and, like, faints in the air. And,
I remember it was the La Flamme d'Amour. she basically set herself on fire on stage.
Yes, it was a lot.
This is a part of you know, that stuff where it's very clear that the prism jump is not just an illusion.
Yes It's like just really intense. Hijiri jumps and saves her, hurting himself in the process, because again, he had injured his leg back in the day from that, you know, sabotage, etc. And they finally confess their feelings to each other, and it's like, oh my god, like, she's dying, and she's like, I had no idea you liked me, and it's like, okay, again, communication, come on.
At that moment, Rinne is moved enough to decide to sacrifice herself in a way,
yes,
by merging back into Jun to stabilize her.
Yes And that unfortunately also means all the penguins are gone, all the pair friends.
Yeah. Even just the power they use to skate on concrete, and just basically the music and the ability to do prism shows, and everything.
Yes.
And at that moment, Naru does what she's done the entire show in the background, usually, which is she composed a heartbeat of her own without using prism stones or the arcane machine or anything. Mm. She just went to perform on her skates. And well, it's clear that on her own, she's not really that good at it. Mm-hmm. Like, she trips and falls a lot. And it kind of mirrors the very first public performance she did earlier in the show, where she had stage fright and couldn't really sing until the audience cheered her on. And there, a similar thing happened, that where the audience tell her to go on despite everything. And that's pretty much what was needed for a passion to shine through and be the deus ex machina that brings the sparkle back, basically.
Yes. Yeah, it works out. And all of them, because she fell a bunch, of course, Naru failed. She doesn't get the title, but Belle does.
Yeah, Belle wins, yes. Officially. But, like I was saying earlier, you know, this whole the passion of the command man is what the real is what the sport is really about.
Right.
Chairman Norizuki points out that probably she's the one who has more merits here.
Yes. But in any case, now that they've all gotten their cords, they can all open the Rainbow Gate and Rene can go back to Prism World, and therefore everything is back to normal. Everything's okay. And there's this... I think it's a goddess that talks to Jone.
Oh, I think it's Sonata from, you know, the Prism Goddess, who just so happens to look exactly like Sonata.
Yes.
The mother of Prism from the previous seasons. Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically, this goddess offers, Rene regains her own body. She performs her song, Gift. Mm-hmm. And first, Jone say that, she has to merge back into Rene now, or else the world will perish anyway, or I think that's what this was. And that's when that's what you were saying, that the Prism Goddess appears and offers to Junei to basically become a normal human woman at the cost of her memories.
Yes. So she's able to stay, and it's implied she will be able to stay with Hijiri specifically, though. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like clearly, like, they're like still interacting, and she just like happens to seemingly have woken up from her trauma with amnesia. So things are hopefully going to be like okay there. And yeah, the final episode, everyone goes back to like their normal lives. Happy Rain performs.
Naru really misses Rene.
Yes. She cleans up her room though. It's nice for her. yes. And then
we stand an organized queen.
And so the trio of Happy Rain perform at the last time at Prism Stone. And so they're like graduating as workers of Prism Stone. But Happy Rain is still going to continue on. And Edelrose is going to be like not a terrible place, I guess.
Yeah. I think Belle becomes chairwoman or something. Jin Norizuki.
It seems like, yeah, like Belle and Hido seem to be like, I'm not sure about like chairwoman, but like definitely like leading.
They become basically the ones in charge, yeah. And we also see Jin now all clad in black and with a mask.
Oh my god, yes.
Promising his revenge.
That was so wild. At the end, I was like, what is this? It's like Phantom of the Opera suddenly. Again, I would expect no less from Pretty Rhythm. This show is
Definitely. Yeah. And it's kind of wild that they teased this before Kinpri was even greenlit. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't even know if the show would still exist or if, because they were pretty much making the way for Prepara there.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And we see a concert of the boys' new unit and things that it's for the show.
Yeah. And we see also like Rine is in Prism World and she says Happy Naru, which is Naru's catchphrase.
Yes. And she's wearing the cord that she wore for the performance.
Yes.
For her last performance. Mm. So, you know, I guess it's a way to say that their friendship lives on, even if her memory is not quite the same.
Right.
That she's still the same person, basically.
Yeah, and it's like cute and sweet and all that. But it's like, yeah, just what a wild show. There's so much. I mean, I basically at this point I was able to understand. I think so far, Dear My Future, as far as like the drama goes, definitely goes in the most extreme places. But yeah, it's just like so interesting to see them like trying to figure out how to keep the show, you know, going, to keep entertaining. There's like these definite tropes about like, you know, getting duos together and like group songs and all of that. Like it's the functions of an idol show in a lot of ways. You know, they're rivals, but in the end, they're all friends and it's very cute and sweet. And yeah, it's just a very fascinating show. And I can see why this particular season is like really popular, because you have six very different girls. This whole team is like really strong.
Mm. Very good songs too, honestly.
Yes. Oh, great songs. Yes. So yeah, it's just a lot of fun. But is there anything else you wanted to say about the season in general?
I guess that's kind of it. Yeah, we went through every major plot point, major arc.
Yes. I guess as far as like the problematic stuff of the show, I think we kind of already touched upon it, like the different family dynamics that are like really toxic. Yeah. And narratively don't really have a satisfying conclusion in a lot of ways. Even Wakana's like, you know, we see her mother when she snaps, she like slaps her father and it's like, wow, that's amazing. What's going on there? But also at the same time is like, I try to imagine kids in similar life situations watching the show and getting this kind of representation in a way.
Yeah.
And like, that is not really a healthy
way.
They
can't all rely on the mother to,
Yeah. So it's a little complex. Same thing with the, you know, the friendships, the toxic friendships at the beginning of the show. It's a lot of that. And, you know, I kind of like talked about it a little bit with like the adult appeal of the previous seasons, but in particular with the different like kind of themes and stuff. For example, like Naru's is, her pear friend is like Labrin, and it's like, you know, love themed. It's very cute. And they all have like different ones based on like different like things as her, like,
yeah, I think it's like the subtypes of the arcade game, basically. Mm-hmm, the categories.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm. Yes. Her like kind of simplest prism jump is like Lovely Splash or whatever. And you know, likewise for all the different girls. And for Belle's case, her theme is sexy, which is like, it's like in Japan, sexy is not,
I imagine,
really...
it doesn't mean the same thing. Yeah, it has to be a cultural,
it like
thing.
Is it isn't, right? So it's like kind of, it's complex. Like for me, it's like still weird to use it, but
yeah,
it is still there. Like it's weird because it's like, there are idol shows for adults, like for an older audience, that don't have like sexy themes in them as like a thing. So it's like, why is it in this show for kids? I don't know.
If I recall correctly, it's also the you know, the one of the types in Aikatsu. So I have to guess this means like from a kid's point of view, or just showing a little bit of shoulder, or yeah,
it's like an adult womanly appeal, basically.
I guess mature would, mature would be more like it, because it's even the sexy seventh chord is not even like sexy. I mean, it's just
right.
It's just a really cool outfit, basically. But yeah,
exactly. It's so
they use it as a shorthand for grown up, basically.
Yes, definitely. I'm not a fan of it. It's kind of weird, but there's all that. And then in Wakana's case, her theme is ethnic.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean,
it doesn't
guess
quite make sense for anything that her character does. Like,
yeah,
yeah.
I guess like they are more referring, you know, to the fabrics, the patterns, the stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it is a little bit iffy. And if I recall correctly, in the hold on, let me see if I can find the pictures. If I recall correctly, mm-hmm. in the early concept art, she was black.
Oh, that's interesting.
There's a lot of very interesting in the beta designs, because like, Anne was supposed to be the protagonist at first, and Belle had heterochromia.
Huh. Okay, yeah, I would be very curious to see that art, actually, because, like, Kazuki is the only character with, like, significantly darker skin, and also he has, like, white hair for some reason.
He's shown as having had
black hair,
when he was a kid, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it could be that he dyed it.
Right, right.
I found a Tumblr post. I'll link it to you on Discord.
Oh, sure. He does dye his hair in particular because his idol is...
Oh, yeah.
DJ Koo. He doesn't know that, but...
Yeah, DJ Koo, yeah.
It's like, in disguise. It's...
Oh, Puku, we barely talked about him.
I mean, there isn't a lot to say. It's like, he's like secretly... Yeah. Oh, wow. Wakana looks very different. I mean, her skin is gray, but like, okay. She's...
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
That theming makes more sense with that in mind. And yeah, it's interesting to see these other characters and stuff. But one thing that I also wanted to mention, and so it makes sense if An was going to be the main character, is that we find out like very, very late in the series that she's a quarter American, I think, where like her grandmother is like a white American woman who just like shows up out of nowhere. And it's like, oh, okay. Where was this the whole show? Get much. Yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah, I imagine being a fool yourself, you probably wish you got to see more of it.
Yeah, it's like, it's an interesting surprise. Like, it's like, okay, this kind of is cool to have as that information, but it's not really useful if it like doesn't show up at all in the whole show, you know? So it's, yeah, it's weird. But yeah,
I mean, it comes up in our Prism Jump, and that's about it.
Insanely like disappointed about Wakana, actually, now that I see her original design. Like, there's even one where she has curly hair. That would have been so cool. Like, she's honestly my favorite character, just as far as like personality, etc. Like, she's just like my favorite to watch. I also kind of like Otabit, it, but
and like for a series that is so tailored for, like, you know, playing dolls, making dress up, having a dark skin character wouldn't have hurt.
Yeah, it would have been so cool to have. And it's like, oh, that's very disappointing. That's very, very disappointing. I'm hoping that there is enough of that, like, a fandom where people are actually, like, you know, open to drawing this version of her, because like, that's the first thing I thought. I was like, oh, I need to draw this. Yeah, like, please. But yeah, so that's disappointing. It's really disappointing. Not shocking for the genre in general, especially this demographic, but there you go. I think as far as other problematic stuff, like those are kind of the main points for me, honestly. It's just like the different themings, not great, but it's like also like you said, it's like a kind of common thing with idol shows. I didn't even know that, so thank you very much for bringing that up, because that's a new thing to be disappointed about. It would have made things a lot different.
Should I say thank you or sorry?
No, it's okay. It's good to know this stuff, right? It's very good, important contact. Yeah, so I guess with that, you know, we have been chatting for quite a while. So again, thank you for coming on the podcast to talk about the show.
It's been my pleasure.
So we're down to the last question, which is, do you have a magical persona for yourself?
I kind of do. Well, huge furry here, disclaimer, kind of intertwined with my persona, but basically, yeah, I think if I personally was some kind of, transforming hero, I must definitely be themed around the bears, my favorite animal, persona, whatever you want to call it, but I mean, even my name is Celtic for, it's an old Celtic word for bear.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Other than that, yeah, it's true. I haven't really given much thought about, like, you know, powers and stuff. But I imagine I would have, you know, kind of a burgundy, a cherry red color scheme.
Sounds cute. Yes.
I am to be.
Yes. I please remind me. I have to send you some time. I have some bear themed magical girls. So.
Oh my god! Please. I mean, I probably make it obvious, but I have something of a cult to Mofurun going on.
Yes, we all love her. But yeah, so yeah, thank you again for coming on the podcast, talk about this series. Where can people find you and follow you online to talk about Pretty Rhythm and Precure and other magical girls?
I'm something on a break from Twitter right now, but you can usually find me at my at my page at Puritikuma, Puritikuma, or on my Tumblr at Miyukiyoshizora, like the Kyurapi, miyukiyoshizora.tumblr.com.
That's a very impressive get for a Tumblr username.
Yeah, I got it like I think 10 years ago, something like that. I felt so relieved when I saw that it wasn't claimed yet.
Yes, excellent. Great. So yes, those links will be in the show notes. So thank you again, and I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Likewise. Thank you very much for having me.
Whether this was your first or last time listening, thank you so much for checking out this episode of Sparkleside Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. We hope you check out the rest of our chats, over 2 years of magical content and counting. And if you like what you heard, tell a friend, or tell 5 friends, or tell the whole world by talking about us online. If you use social media, don't forget to use the hashtag SparkleSideChats when talking about and sharing the podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at MagicalGirlAyu, spelled A-Y-U, and you can find me at AyuShenos, AyuShenows. You can also email us at sparklesidechats@gmail.com. Did you know we also take recommendations for future guests and topics? Just fill out the form in the show notes. You can even suggest yourself if you're so bold. The very best free way to support the podcast is using your podcast platform to give a rating and review of our little show. This gives the big internet machines the message that they should share it with more people, and I think we all want that, don't we? You can also join the Discord server for this podcast to talk about Magical Girls 24/7, often chatting directly with me and both previous and upcoming guests of the podcast. The forever link is in the show notes as well as on the socials, so be sure to stop by. Show notes can be found on your podcast platform of choice or at our main landing page at anchor.fm/sparkleside. If you have a few bucks, you can give a one-time donation at ko-fi.com or ko-fi.com/ayushinos. You can also commit to a monthly membership, which grants you access to bonus episodes about Magical Girls and adjacent content such as movies, comics, and other series that Magical Girl fans tend to also love. All it takes is $5 a month, but if you want to rank up, that'll give you discounts on art commissions and monthly requests as well. Music credits, as always, are also in the show notes. Original podcast music is by Hazel. You can find her on Twitter at A Few Bruises. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you are magical, forever and always. See you next time!